All right, welcome back to the Canadian Gun Vault Behind the Ball Door. My name is Mark Morelli. I'll be your podcast host. Joining me today, none other than special guest, Warren from the Hamilton Gun Club. Warren, thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome.
Hey, Warren, you know what? You're a bit of a fixture in this community. You've been around a while. I understand you got a birthday coming up sometime shortly. 82. Is that about right?
That's about right.
That's outstanding. All right, so you've seen quite a bit change over the years, come and go, lots of stuff. All right, you've been a member of the firearm community for, you know, a good portion of that 82 years, I imagine.
Yes, 42 years.
Really?
Yeah.
When did you fire your first gun? Do you remember when you fired your first gun?
You mean here at the club?
No, just anywhere, anywhere.
I'd probably be 8 or 9.
Okay.
I fired my first shotgun.
Really?
Yeah.
12 gauge?
Yeah.
Really? Back when men were men, right? That's the way it ought to be. You know,
my dad was a cop. I've been around guns a lot.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that about you. Your father was a police officer? A cop?
Yeah, he was a chief of police, yeah.
You're kidding me.
No.
Where?
Norwich, and he also worked for the OPP, and he worked out of Delhi.
That's outstanding. I did not know that about you.
Yeah, well, surprise.
Well, you know, like I met you, it's got to be 5 years ago now. I would imagine about 5 years ago. I met you here at the club, and you struck me as like, you're like Lee Ermey. I used to say like Lee Ermey. He's like a drill sergeant, right? And I saw you out there, you know, and you have to understand this about me, Warren. Like, I mean, I was a police officer myself for years here in the city of Hamilton. And I enjoyed a very successful career. I did, you know, the whole office of the year thing, that kind of nonsense, right? And for me, it was a lot of fun being a cop. But I could recognize discipline when I saw you out there shooting. And then, of course, we had our first conversation, which didn't go so well because I was shooting one of them fandangled, like, AR-style shotguns. I remember you saw me shooting a magazine-fed AR-15 style shotgun, and you were like, that's got no business being out here. Like, you were filterless, and I loved it. And so like, you've been around a while. You've been shooting guns, you know, pretty much your entire life.
Yes.
And I'm sure you've seen a lot of changes in the law. Things have gradually, you know, over the years happened to this firearm community. Certainly, have you heard about what's going on with the firearm laws like now?
The firearm?
Yeah.
Bill 21.
Yeah. You know about it then. Yeah. Okay. All right. And so it got final assent. That was something that we knew was coming. They passed it. And, you know, there's been some speculation amongst the firearm community that, you know, they're coming after everything. They're not just coming after, like, you know, a few things. Like, they want it all ultimately. They've tipped their hand and they've said that, you know, hunting shotguns were on the table. And a lot of people were unaware of it, but they put forward an amendment to the bill at one point, you know, that included guns like Benelli's and Remington 1100s. You know, like, so
stupid.
Well, it's completely ridiculous, and I'm sure, you know, you're fully aware that the legal firearm community are not the ones running around out there knocking over mini marts at you know, 3 a.m. But you know, as a trap shooter, right? Because I notice you seem to have a real fondness for the sport of trap shooting, right? And for these people that are listening that may not know what trap shooting is, it's one of the clay busting sports. This is performed with a shotgun. It is one clay bird target flying out of a trap house in one of 9 random directions. Like, you never know which way it's going
to
go.
If you were to count it,
yep.
Even though they're subtle,
yep.
There's 72 different angles.
No way, really?
Yeah.
See now, like, I haven't spent as much time trap shooting, and you know, it's one of those things that I want to get back into. It's certainly where I started. It to me, it looked slower than skeet. As a new person to shooting shotguns, you know, trap looked like it was slower and by sheer virtue of that fact, easier. But I learned very quickly that that was not the case. Right. Trap shooting is like not one of those sports that's easily mastered.
Yeah, well, if you really want to know the speed, the maximum speed that allowable right now is 43 miles an hour out of the trap house.
Okay.
And trap, it's 48 and 49.
Skeet?
Or skeet, sorry.
Yeah.
It's 48 and 49.
So,
but they're substantially closer.
Okay. All right. So. Yeah, skeet, I always tell people that skeet is, you know, a little more social and a little bit closer and dynamic.
A heck of a lot more social. Trap line, you say nothing.
Exactly. And, you know, that was one of the other things that stood out to me is just that, you know, here at the Hamilton Gun Club, we have a beautiful, you know, backdrop to perform these kinds of activities. And we've got trap trap microphones set up, right, that actually capture your voice and activate the launchers. So when you're up there on the line, if you want to joke around with your buddy, or if you want to say, like, shit, how could I have missed that one, you're going to send the birds continuously launching until they're all gone, and probably piss some people off in the process. Because every time one of those birds flies, you know, another one comes off your card. So, I mean, it's like money, cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. You know, that's another thing. I'm sure you've seen a change in pricing over the years. I always love talking to people from your generation, you know, like discussing things like buying, a 50-cent brick of 22 shells, you know, to feed your favorite little, plinker. Like, over the years, you've probably seen a lot of changes in pricing.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
And also a case of shells back then was 20 in a box. Now it's 10.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay, so hold on now. So average price right now for a flat of 10 boxes of 12-gauge shells is about $120 to $135.
That's correct.
All right. And, I mean, what was that kind of fodder costing you back in the day? What do you remember paying?
$60.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, like, that's a substantial difference. Years ago, though, like, I mean, when you first started shooting, would you say that it was not unusual to see, like, you know, $6 a box or $4 a box? Like, do you remember those days?
Maybe two.
Really? Oh, my God.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, wow. You know, like, I can't even imagine. Sometimes I go through magazines and I see the old ads. Like, I remember LeBaron's. Like, I was around and got into the gun community when I was 18. As soon as I turned 18, I applied, I put my FAC in, and Vic Taransky, who was the firearms officer at the Hamilton Police Service at the time, I think it was still called the police force back then, he called me up and he said, like, you know what, I'm not giving you this license if it ends up in a taxi cab, because I worked at Blue Line Taxi. And when I first got my license, I remember going to LeBaron's and looking through a hand-drawn, like, they used to draw pictures of the guns in these catalogs. And I went to LeBaron's, and I remember buying, ammunition for a fraction of what it is today. It's crazy how much things cost. So I mean, trap shooting obviously is your passion, and you spent a lot of time competing, I'm sure, right, over the years.
I haven't done anything for the last, 4 or 5 years. I don't put in any real big competitions anymore.
No?
I mean, on the circuit, I used to go all the time, but not now. In 2020, I got pretty sick, and then I turned, I'm going to 82. Yeah. I'm nowhere near like I used to be.
Really?
So, yeah.
Things slow down a little bit. I'm feeling a little bit of that myself now at 51.
Yeah.
I'm sure you look at me and think, like, I don't even know, right, what's coming. I've been pretty hard on my body all my life, buddy. Like, I've worked out. I've engaged in contact sports. I love colliding with people, as a police officer.
Yeah, I played hockey. I played hockey, I played baseball, I played football, I played basketball, did all that shit.
Yeah. And yet here you are at 82 years of age, and I don't miss you. From week to week, you're here. No less than twice a week, I've noticed.
No,
breaking
three
birds.
Times.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're hitting it up. Well, I tell you right now, buddy, I started up that skeet school thing.
Yeah.
And lots of people coming through. Like, we've had a lot of, friendly faces, members of the public that have nothing to do with the sport. They've been coming in, like, in record numbers and wanting to try it. I haven't branched out into trap shooting yet. We created Skeet School, and it's very popular, and people really love it. And we're doing it, of course, safely, and people are having a lot of fun. But I thought about doing something called Trap Tutor, right? Like... I thought it would be kind of cool, but I don't know enough about the sport. Like, I really don't. Like, I mean, I can get out there and stand on the line and break a few, but, like, I don't understand the gentle nuances of being, successful trap shooter. Like, I mean, when you start, you're pointing your gun, I was told, a foot off the top of the box.
Approximately, yes.
Okay.
Depends on what's comfortable for you.
Okay. And like, so let's say I'm in the center position. I decide I'm going to take a hold point 1 foot above that trap house box, and then the bird takes off, and my first instinct is to go after it right away and then to try to lead it. But, I have mixed results at best. Right?
It's automatic. It, once you get onto it, it's not hard.
Okay. All right. So you
remember, you're not looking down the sights of your gun. You're looking out in the field.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So I tell people, once you drive your face down onto the stock of the gun, that you keep your face down tight to the gun, and you and the gun move as one unit. You know, once you get your eye line level with the top of the gun, you flatten out the rail and you look at the sight. I tell people, look past it and let that sight be blurry. Focus on the bird and not the sight. Yeah. And I notice people tend to flow better with it, you know, rather than aim, you know, and lock
keep,
up.
Keep both eyes open if you can.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And so, like, as a competitive shooter, like, you shot with both eyes open all the time?
All the time.
All the time. Okay. And do you have any personal records, you know, out there crushing birds, like consecutive numbers? Like, what's the most you've ever hit in a row, like back to back?
Several times I've gotten 199 out of 200.
Oh, wow.
You know, yeah. Lots of times 100 straight. I can't tell you how many.
Really? You know, yeah, see, you know what? I'm not a perfectionist, and I have hit 25 out of 25. I've never done it more than once. I did it with an EOTech on a shotgun, which I remember, I think it was you that came up to me. I was shooting the shotgun and it had a holographic sight on the top of it. And I remember you telling me, like, what the fuck is that? Like, well, how do you see the bird at all? like there's different, you know, obviously equipment that I liked using at the time. Now my personal favorite's the Remington 1100. Right, like, I mean, I've obviously grown up a little bit. I like fun shotguns. I like some stuff that's a little bit on the short side, but
semi-automatic.
Yeah,
it's got a little less recoil than the other guns.
Yep. But,
and that's good. And a Remington 1100 is a good gun.
Yep.
You just have to be careful that the guy next to you doesn't get the empty shell in his pocket.
Yeah. Well.
So if you've got some way to stop that shell from
shell catcher
hitting the guy next to you, then that's what they do.
So. Well, Joe, right? Seiko, is that it? Yeah. He sold me a Remington 1100 back in the day that had a shell catcher built right on top of it. Yeah. So when you pull the trigger, it would come out and it would catch the side of it, and like it was there for you to kind of manually remove. You know, semi-automatics on the trap line do, unfortunately, afford you many opportunities to kick a spent casing, you know, out onto your nearest neighbor. And with some of the values on some of the guns that are out there.
I tell you, there's $20,000 guns out there.
Oh, shit.
You don't want to scratch them.
Oh, shit. I saw a kid down there with a Purdy. And I was like, geez, like, some of these guns warrant.
If they got the money, what the hell?
Well, you know, it's like a rolling house, though, man. Like, this Purdy shotgun, I think he said it was like $147,000 or something like that. No, not that one. Oh, yeah, obviously it doesn't meet your approval. Well, no, but there's some great over and unders out there. Sure. Perazzi, I think, would fall into that category.
Good, yeah.
How do you feel about Zoli?
Zoli, I think, is a good gun.
Okay, all right,
and then, that's close by too.
Yeah, yeah, well, that's local, right? They're local, right?
Yeah, I've seen them come out.
Excuse me, I just had to take a little swig of drink there, coffee. Zoli, Perazzi,
Craigoff.
I was just, you beat me to it. That's Serge's favorite.
Yeah.
That's Serge's favorite. I mean, have you ever shot a Cesar Guarini?
Yep.
What'd you think?
I was all right.
It was all right?
Yeah. I've shot guns that were cheaper and I felt better.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? What do you think's best bang for your buck these days? Right, for somebody getting into trap shooting that doesn't want to buy an entry level gun, wants to get something of a decent quality, nothing crazy.
To be honest with you, I think your BG-99 is the best money for the dollar.
You know what? I heard you talking about one of those not that long ago. Really?
Yeah.
Really? And that's Browning product. No, BT-99. That's
Browning.
It's Browning product. Okay, and so what is it that makes the BT-99 special in your mind as an entry level gun that is good value?
Yeah, well, I'd say it's a little better than entry level, but I've got two of them.
Okay,
I've had both of them for years. Both shoot, but I've got released triggers on both now.
Oh, really?
Well, because I'm getting too old. I've got too many flinches.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, now, there's an interesting thing. I have seen occasionally in the shotgun racks here at the Hamilton Gun Club, the odd 12-gauge shotgun sitting there with either a R written on it, right, or a sticker that says release.
Both mine got that on.
On the trigger guard. And can you explain to people what is a release trigger? Because, I mean, we were all,
It's when you're getting ready to shoot, instead of pulling the trigger.
Yes.
You pull the trigger, then let go before it goes off.
So it's the release of the trigger that actually ignites the cartridge, and you're off to the races. Okay, so basically you load your shotgun, you pull the trigger once you're set up, you pull the trigger, you call the bird, and then in order to hit it, you have to release the trigger. So it's a total opposite of what some people are used to.
That's right.
All right, and of course the danger in that is if the gun is not clearly marked and somebody were to pick up the wrong shotgun on the rack, if they went out there, loaded their gun, called pulled the trigger, nothing happened, and they started to lower the gun and let go of the trigger, they'd have an accidental discharge.
Yep.
And so the release trigger is obviously meant to improve your chances of hitting the bird through what means? Like you're more relaxed as you're releasing it? Or?
Well, they have a tendency not to flinch as much.
Really?
Yeah.
Little mental trick?
It's a mental thing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Sometimes when you're not really on the bird and you've got to go to shoot anyway, you flinch.
Yes.
And I've seen guys flinch and walk 3 feet in front of themselves.
Really? Yeah. So. Well, see, now I've tried to explain to people one of the things that I've noticed, right? And I mean, I'm not an instructor. I just guide people through an experience. What I've noticed is that some people tend to yank the gun down just as they're pulling the trigger in anticipation of the recoil. They'll pull the trigger, but they'll yank the gun downward at the last moment. And that's what Warren and I are referring to as flinch, right? That pulling off target at the last second.
There's different ways to say you flinch. You just don't want to let go of the trigger.
Okay.
Or you're trying to let go of the trigger and you don't, you know.
Okay.
And, so you're way off, so.
Well, you know, I think, you know.
It's got to be an individual that can concentrate on what a release trigger is. I shoot both.
Okay, well, see, that would screw me up, right? That
screws a lot of people.
Well, I was going to say, like, sometimes I'll switch. Like, I'm notorious for trading guns, you know, mid-round. I might go back to the rack. It's like, for me, it's like grabbing the fire iron and then grabbing, you know, a different club. I've gone back to the rack and grabbed a different shotgun. I never really get too used to one gun. And sometimes I'll want to grab pumps and then I'll move over to semis. I've had a couple of times where, you know, I've gone onto my Remington 1100 and I pulled on the forestock as I pulled the trigger, you know, the same way I do with a pump. What you're saying, I think, is that, you know, release triggers are not for novices.
That's for sure.
I think there's definitely a potential hazard there. Shit, like even me, like I mean, I could get a little confused. I don't know how you switch between guns, Warren. You're a seasoned shooter. You've been doing this a long time. You ever do any hunting?
Many times.
Really? Yeah.
My mother, when I was younger, had to tell us to stop shooting because of. Freezer was too full.
Oh, really? Yeah. Not a bad problem to have, right, back then? Right. Well, you know, I would think that culture was a little different back then.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've certainly seen a lot of changes like we spoke about earlier. I know for a fact that my high school boiler room had a built-in range. Like, they had a range inside the schools. So, like, it was a lot more acceptable for young people to be out there.
The high school I went to had a rifle range downstairs.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
We also had a cadets.
Were you one of those kids that brought their gun to school to shoot afterwards?
No, I shot it after. It was the gun that I used was there.
It was on site?
Yeah, well, downstairs, locked up.
Really?
Yeah.
What, like, was it like a little 22?
Well, yeah, on a 303 frame.
Mm. Are you telling me that you were shooting one of those Lee Enfields?
Yes.
A Mark 7?
I don't know if it was a Mark 7. It was.
It was one of the long branch ones. Like did it have the full wood.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
so
you're shooting 22.
Yeah, you're shooting the trainer. Yeah. You were shooting the trainer. I got myself one of those. And you know all about that.
Yeah.
That you know what that has turned out to be one of the most fun guns to shoot ever. Mine was a World War I vintage one that I got. And somebody had cut the wood a little bit. They didn't change much. Well, the gun itself was intact. What I needed to do was just get a different piece of wood, right? And I got a period correct one. Right, like that gun's from, if memory serves me correctly, 1915. Yeah. Right, so it was a Lee Enfield BSA trainer from World War I, and it was Canadian marked. And you know, for me, when I saw that, I bought it before I even saw it, and I knew I wanted one. I'm a big fan of, you know, Canadian military arms history. When I heard that come by, I was like, oh, I got to try that. And I just had to replace one piece of wood, get some rings, and I was off to the races with like a vintage piece that I loved. And shooting it, Warren, I got to tell you, what a fun gun to plink with. Oh my God. I never thought 22, like one shot at a time, could be so hysterically fun. You know what I run through that gun, Warren, that makes me laugh harder than anything is the CB Quiets. You know, the really... not the shorts, but they make less powerful.
1,000 feet a second.
Less than that, 770, right? Okay. So when you pull the trigger on that Lee Enfield with those quiets, you hear the hammer drop, and that's it, right? I had to check the barrel like three times to be convinced that the bullet was leaving it. It was hitting the target, but like I'd look down the barrel and give it a blow, and when the smoke cleared, it was like, okay, they're leaving the barrel and they're accurate, so they're okay. What a fun gun that is to shoot. You guys were probably in that basement plinking away. Would you do that like after hours? Would it be like... Really?
And the principal used to be a major in the Army.
No way.
Oh, yeah.
So he probably...
He come down there wanting us to... trying to get guys to shoot.
Really?
Yeah.
You had to convince people back then?
Not really. They didn't. A lot of times they didn't know about it.
No, really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, you know, like growing up with guns and using them safely and hunting with them, and then, of course, as you move forward with your life, you know, competing and, you know, this is really a big part of who you are now, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Right? Like,
yep.
Yeah, you know, I can tell. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you today. And, of course, I didn't want to take up too much of your time. For those of you that haven't...
more than 5 minutes.
It was a lot more than 5 minutes. I promised him that if he just drank the coffee, by the time he was done the coffee, we'd be done. He said, I'll give you 5 minutes. That's what I got. Well, I have to thank you. All right, thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for being here on the show with me. All right, I consider it an absolute pleasure and an honor to interview somebody like yourself. I'm hoping I can get you on the show again at some point, because you've got a lot of thoughts to share. I'd love to talk to you about Justin Trudeau at some point, but I think that's another conversation we'll have at a later
date. I won't
tell
you what I'd like to do with
that. Oh man, well look, I look forward to the day I get a chance to talk to you like this again. Thank you again, right, so much for being here, Warren.
No problem,
right? Absolute pleasure. Alright folks, make sure you tune into us. We're going to be delivering a lot more podcasts as we move forward. It's been an absolute joyride. I apologize for taking a hiatus for a while, but we've had a lot on the go. Skeet School's been keeping me pretty busy, and so don't forget to like and subscribe, and as always, Canada, don't forget to shoot straight, stay safe.